Nick Theodor from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and Jamie Peck from the University of British Columbia in Canada, one of whom I'm connected with by water, the other one by land. Very interesting concept. So take it away.
Thank you, Roger, and thanks for inviting us to this event, which we're enjoying very much. Nick and I are both going to try to speak. You might also notice that Neil Brenner is on the program, connected to this paper, so I should clarify his responsibility, which is very limited for what we're about to say. Neil will be glad to hear, I'm sure. But the roots of the presentation lie in a joint paper with Neil, which is available on the conference website, I believe, which outlines an analytical framework for making sense of neoliberal urbanism. Today, Nick and I are going to develop two themes from this paper that Neil doesn't really know anything about yet, so he's certainly absolved from responsibility for what we say, but we want to use that paper as a jumping-off point to explore two issues. These are, firstly, this question of crisis that Neil was just talking about. One of the key questions of the moment, of course, is whether the financial crisis signals the death knell of neoliberal forms of governance, or may it instead, to quote George Bush, we need to be careful that we don't underestimate neoliberalism and its elasticity, capacity to respond to and indeed inhabit these moments of crisis, which is the political environment in which neoliberalism was born and in which it spreads. So we want to suggest, extending the argument from the paper, that neoliberalism is a polyvalent project which is deeply imbricated in contemporary sources of social power and institutional power. And neoliberalism is also a creature of crisis. Its business-as-usual mode of operation has been to spread through crisis moments. And so we need to think very carefully, I think, about each one of the distinctive threats that crises represent. So one of the things we will do is offer a succinct answer to the question of, is neoliberalism dead or alive? We've figured out a one-word answer to that question. Is neoliberalism dead or alive? Both is the answer to the question. And I'll try and explain how we think that neoliberalism is both dead as an ideology and living as a project. And the way that it staggers on in this zombie-like state will, I think, shape the responses to the financial crisis. So that's the first theme. I'll talk about that one. The second one, Nick is going to pick up, and that's the theme of what we're calling inter-urbanism. We want to suggest that neoliberal urbanism is not just something that happens in cities. It shapes and conditions the relationships between cities. We know that cities are spaces of experimentation for neoliberal projects like workfare and privatisation. We also know that cities are major sites of struggles against neoliberalism, such as the living wage movement and environmental movements and so on. But what Nick and I have been trying to do in some of our empirical work recently is to trace neoliberalism's characteristic forms of inter-urbanism. And for us, that means looking at some of the ways in which what we're calling fast policy networks are being constructed between cities and connecting cities in some of the kinds of ways that Roger was talking about earlier today. There's an interesting book by Beth Simmons, Garrett and Dobbin called Global Diffusion of Markets and Democracy, which argues actually that these kinds of transnational fast policy networks are here to stay, even if the moment of neoliberal expansion, ideological expansion, stalls, these networks of connection between cities are here to stay and are likely to shape the forms of interurban politics which are likely to take shape in the coming decades. So it remains an open question for us whether fast policy networks are co-constituted with neoliberalism or somehow separate from them, as Simmons et al. Suggest. But that's one of the questions which is in play in our work. So I'm just going to say something about the crisis, and then Nick will pick up this second theme and talk about it a bit more empirically. So it's become commonplace to view neoliberalism as a form of crisis theory. Naomi Klein's rather linear account of neoliberalism insists that it not only exploits but actually provokes crises. From regulation theory and urban political economy, there's an argument, and we discussed this in the joint paper with Neil, that crises play a genetic and generative role in shaping the form and path of neoliberal restructuring strategies. The genetic is genetic in the sense that a defining feature of neoliberalism is its very peculiar marriage of a utopian ideology of market progress and a frontal attack on those social forces, collective forms, rights and institutions that stand outside and against the project. So neoliberalism has this both utopian face and its a reactive attack on alien institutions and sources of social power. So this means that not only does the neoliberal project proceed through social struggle and institutional transformation, but these are formative histories that shape the character and direction of actually existing neoliberalisms at the urban scale, at the national scale, and so on. So neoliberalism then is invariably born through moments of crisis and conflict, and those histories live on with the trajectory of distinctive neoliberal pathways. So there's the geography of neoliberalism is one of the profound ways we think of opening up the very nature of the beast. Crises are also generative in the sense that neoliberal forms of governance and regulation are forged through these struggles. Neoliberalism isn't some fixed blueprint or set of commandments etched in stone and handed down from Mont Pelerin. What it is, to use a phrase of Hayek's, is a flexible credo. And Hayek's own critique of 19th century liberalism was that the distinctive neoliberalism had to be more flexible and adaptable to a range of circumstances. And this is very much what the ideational project of neoliberal reconstruction was about after the Second World War. So this is why we would argue it's more appropriate to attach the label neoliberal or neoliberalization to forms of restructuring rather than a stable order or system. And so in our paper with Neil, we talk about neoliberalism as this pattern or programmatic pattern of restructuring, not a era or system or whatever. So we need to bear this in mind, we think, when considering the nature of the current crisis and the current conjuncture. Is the current crisis analogous to a Berlin Wall moment? As Naomi Klein has suggested, as Eric Hobsbawm has suggested, that's the appropriate analogy, in which the entire edifice of neoliberal regulation and governance will come tumbling down. On the other hand, should we view the current moment as a mother of all crises moment, in which will be a matter of significant social struggle across the ideological, institutional and ideational realms? We would take the latter view, because we don't see neoliberalism as some unified edifice, but as a programmatic pattern of restructuring working across multiple registers and animated and re-innovated by crisis and contradiction. Of course, these crises may ultimately prove terminal for the neoliberal project itself, and so they may trigger yet another, or on the other hand, they may trigger a readjustment around a neoliberalism 3.0 or 4.0 or whatever version we're on now. Now, we don't have a crystal ball about figuring out what kinds of adjustments might occur through this crisis, and we're only watching the early stages of it unfold at the present time. But clearly the first lines of defence have been about the technocratic containment of the crisis, which seems to us to be one of the trends in the pattern of neoliberal governance, is this growing reliance on technocratic forms of management. So the $700 billion bailout For example, in the United States, which is currently being administered by a committee of five Treasury officials, supported by a staff of just 40, operating in secret, who are apparently scoring individual banks on a 1-to-5 ratio. And if you get one or two, they will then wire you several billion dollars to save your bank. If you get five, it'll fail. And so this is all occurring practically in secret, and these kinds of responses in many ways are typical to the sorts of technocratic, privatised response to crisis which we've seen in various realms of neoliberal governance. So the overriding concern then seems to be to patch up the system of financial risk management, largely with public dollars. Meanwhile, little or nothing is being done about the social risks that are routinely exacerbated by neoliberalisation. So space has been opened up for the technocratic re-regulation of finance, the case for which has been accepted by major organs like The Economist, The Wall Street Journal's op-ed page, and the various Washington think tanks, who are now accepting various arguments for minimalist financial regulation. But they're already working feverishly to ensure that this effort at re-regulation is limited to the re-regulation of the financial system, and it doesn't spread out into other realms. Of course, we don't know how this story is going to end, and one of the major unpredictable elements is the nature of the emergent form of Obamanomics, as it's sometimes called. It seems pretty likely that Obama will govern from the centre, whether he likes it or not. That's the political dynamics seem to suggest that. His economic team is heavily stacked with Wall Street types and even quite a few Chicago schoolers. His economic philosophy, such that he's articulated it so far, seems to be based on a pragmatic approach. He talks about embracing what works in a very similar way to Tony Blair's language about his economic philosophy. So whether Obama's will be some sort of fourth way or a re-hated third way will remain to be seen, but all the indications are it's likely to be a fairly centrist programme. But while the world is asking what will Obama do, the folks at the conservative think tanks in the middle of this crisis are asking what they consider to be a rather more pertinent question, which is, what would Reagan do? And so this is a little teachable moment, I think, where we can see what the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., think what Reagan would do in the current situation. If you get all of these questions right, by the way, they'll send you a free pocket copy of the Constitution. It's detailed here on the side. So what did Reagan do when faced with a slowing economy? Did he expand social programs, promote economic freedom and the free market, work with Congress to regulate the economy? I'm sure you're already ahead of the... Yes, it's number two. What did Reagan remind us about government bailouts, the Heritage Foundation people are asking? Whenever there are Americans hurting, the government must act, is number one. Government must always correct bad market decisions, is two. Every dollar that the government gives to someone has to be taken away from someone else. Correct.